Behind the Wheel with Peter Hitchener and Chris Miller.
Driven by behindthewheel.com.au.
When do we go for a ride?
Oh, look out. We've broken out the cake. We've broken out the champagne. It is show number 500.
Hooray. Well done.
So how have people listened to us for 500 weeks straight? I pity you all. Thank you for staying with us.
Oh, thank you so much for your support. And what a great story it is, the story of Behind the Wheel, how it started, what sort of incarnations it's been through along the way.
It has.
I think we really ought to have a yarn, don't you think, to
the founder. Guru,
the founder, the man behind it all, the man who had a vision.
And founder's such a good title, isn't it? It doesn't sound in the least bit pretentious or up yourself. Here he is.
He had a dream.
Joel Helms. Hi, Joel.
Hey, guys. How are we?
Very well. I got to say, hats off to you, dude. Like, really, you started this, what, about 1972, I believe it was.
It was July 2007, which doesn't sound like that far away, you know, that long ago, but it's coming up to 11 years ago, which is pretty unbelievable.
And that's an hour of radio programming, week in, week out, since July 2007, not to mention the, what, I think 25,000-odd posts that are currently sitting at behindthewheel.com.au?
Yeah, well, it did start out as a radio-only product, because my background being in radio primarily.
Mm-hmm. You were the weather girl, were you?
The weather girl, no.
The barrel girl.
No.
He was kind of the Lavinia Nixon of radio news.
Hey. Oh, Joel, take no notice of him. He's being entertaining again.
Yeah, well, he's entertaining himself. That's the most important thing.
Exactly.
But yeah, no, it was born out of having worked in radio and there not being any real automotive content on radio stations. I just thought that was a bit of an opportunity there in the market, and started out with the little daily segments that a lot of the radio stations still play. And then we started the program, which started out as a half an hour program back in the early days, and then grew to an hour. And then Chris Miller came along at some stage quite a while ago, and then Peter Hitchener came along, and yeah, it's just kind of growing and morphed. And I guess it's become, and it's funny because the actual moment when it popped into my head, really, I was pushing my daughter in her pram, and I guess you'd say that Behind the Wheel has kind of grown up with her over the years and changed and gone through, you know, different stages and ideas and things. But yeah, it's been a very interesting life experience.
So technically we should be called Behind the Pram.
Behind the pram, exactly. That's right. Yes.
That's good work, Joel. Now, of course, with changes in technology, the show has sort of morphed into a podcast as well. Was it always that?
Yeah, well, the podcast came along a little bit after the radio show began. I think that was sort of the natural progression, where I had the radio station sort of in first and foremost in my mind, and then, yeah, we started the podcast and went back and put all the back episodes onto podcast, and yeah, so there's the 500 podcasts sitting there ready to be downloaded, so you've got about 480 hours of automotive content there.
And I bet you can't wait. That is binge listening at its very best. So, while we're on facts and figures,
yep.
How far and wide do we go in this day and age?
Well, yeah, the radio network it obviously started out pretty small with the number of stations that decided to take what was the segments in those first days. And I remember the first radio station that came along and was really appreciative of that. And we got to about 14 stations after a couple of weeks, and I thought, this is going pretty well. And then it's just continued to grow, and a lot of those stations have been there almost since day one, but I'm really glad about stations like 2LT in Lithgow and 3GG in Victoria.
Yeah.
Yeah, Flow FM from South Australia, and of course also broadcasting in the Northern Territory and Victoria as well. You know, they've been there almost since day one as well. So, you know, some of those radio stations have been there for, 10 years or over 10 years now, so really appreciative of that. And yeah, broadcast right across every state and territory in Australia now, which I think is fantastic.
And are we still going into Vanuatu? I remember us going there for a little while.
Vanuatu, yeah, and a little bit in New Zealand as well.
So, oh, Hebrew!
Yeah.
I love it. What's been the biggest challenge, do you think, for Behind the Wheel over the years?
I think the biggest challenge has always been the balancing between the radio program and the podcast and the online stuff. You know, I think really we started out as a radio product that had a website, and then it sort of, to a degree, became a website that had a radio program. And I guess finding that balance along the way. The car manufacturers have been generally very good to us over the years as well. As the listeners hear every week, they provide us with the cars that enable us to talk about you know, their products and gives us something to talk about every week. So that's been good. But, you know, like every business, it's been full of challenges, two steps forward, one step back, and some sleepless nights along the way.
I think one of the things I'm most proud of, unlike, and I'm sure a lot of people are not aware, that there's a lot of kind of paid-for editorial content that goes on with other places, but we've remained steadfastly independent without bending over and taking money to say nice things about products and cars. And that's one thing I'm really proud of, because it's so rare in this day and age.
Yeah, I think that we are, I guess, on the inside of the industry, you're privy to information and things that perhaps the general public aren't, and it can be difficult for us to be able to talk about those things because, you know, the industry is not that large. And you never want to sound like you're, I suppose, whinging or complaining.
Sure.
But yeah, I mean, there have been some things over the years that I know have gone on that don't sit well with me. And, you know, some organisations that play every trick in the book. But, you know, I mean, I think it's probably the same in every
industry.
Walk of life.
Yeah, exactly right. All right, well, let's get back on to what's made us the bread and butter over the last 11 years or so. And you finally had your bum in the seat of a Kia Stinger. Now, you've heard us rave endlessly. You've heard Simon go on about it. What's the Joel take?
Well, I guess the interesting thing about it, I don't think there's ever been a car that's landed with as much hype.
You're
as
right.
The Stinger. I think it's just the most talked about vehicle. And landing at just such a crucial point in the Australian car industry, with Falcon going and Commodore going. Generally, yeah, it's a pretty amazing car, isn't it? I had to go of the GT, the twin turbo V6, rear wheel drive. I thought it was a very likeable vehicle. I thought the roof line was a little on the low side, and it was a little bit narrow as compared to what you might find in your traditional Commodore over the years. So,
sure.
You know, it is a large car, but perhaps not on the smaller side of large, I suppose you'd say.
Yep.
But very good driving dynamics, very good performance. Did you guys think that it could sound a bit more aggressive?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably about the biggest criticism I've got of the car.
About the only one that
I can remember, true,
actually.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It'd just be nice to have a big growl or some pops and crackles that are so, you know, sort of popular these days.
You know, and I think that, while I'm not complaining about the car at all, I think it's a fantastic effort and a real sign of how far Kia has come. I mean, what an amazing story that is. If you talk about 2007, you know, the people who bought Kias were those only on a strict budget. They were only buying them because they were cheap and cheerful. But, you know, now you've got cars like the Stinger that people actually, you know, aspire to own, which I think is pretty amazing.
Well, Joel, congratulations. You should be very proud of what you've achieved, even if you did end up hiring a couple of idiots to front the radio show. But, hey, you know, that's the way things go. And look,
thanks.
For our 500th show, we've got lots on the cards. Joel, thank you. Simon and Rachel are along shortly. And something I think you'll be interested in, Joel, topic today that basically takes into account cars that we once thought would be absolutely amazing, and then we got a chance to drive them or sit in them and realise they were just utter crap.
Yeah, they do come up every now and then, those ones.
They do. So, well,
expectations
that's
can be a dangerous thing.
Thank you very much, Joel. Congratulations again. We'll catch up with you next week. We've got to keep moving because we're going to head round the block now. One of the hottest little hatches around. It's the Golf R Grid.
I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, so we've made it down into the behind-the-wheel garage, or more technically known as the behind-the-wheel side of the street.
That's exactly where it is. And, wow, take a look at this, Miller. Look at the wheels, first of all.
Okay, so it's the Golf R Grid Edition, which is your cut-price Golf R. You know, at the same time as it being based on a garden variety Golf, which aren't known for their svelte lines, just the tiny little styling cues have given this car kind of a more aggressive, but whapping over the top. It's not an HSV with a, you know, a sort of badge on every panel.
No, not at all. No, that's not how they do things. And yet it's incredibly fast and furious to drive, from what I've read and from what you've said about it. So we're going to jump in a minute and see how it goes.
That's it. Well, we're talking 206 kilowatts out of a 2-litre turbo four-cylinder.
Yep.
All-wheel drive.
Yep.
And this one's a manual.
this is awesome. I want one of these. How much am I going to have to pay for one, Miller?
Look, not as much as you'd have to pay for a standard Golf R grid, or Golf R, I should say, because this is the grid edition.
Yeah.
And the grid edition actually means that you don't get leather seats, you don't get a sunroof. But you know what? I don't reckon you need one anyway, because it's got everything else. Now just get a load of this. We're talking all-wheel drive, 206 kilowatts.
Yep.
That's manual. Ready?
Yep. Wow. Oh, yeah. Now, the back of my head that just thumped into the back the chair will recover in time.
Should we go straight to the chiropractor?
I tell you what, though, I love this. It's just beautiful, isn't it? I love the lines from the outside. It looks so great, as we've said.
But look at this finish, though. You know, like, I mean,
it's beautiful.
You've got this big screen. So what's that? That's got to be a good 8 inches wide, I suppose.
That's right. It's very sizable. And when you said it's a cheap car, I think, Is it? It doesn't feel like it. It feels absolutely stunning.
It's pretty much like all the Volkswagen product, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It always feels a lot more expensive than it actually is.
Yep.
But, you know, this is the sort of car that would normally be reserved for cars north of, you know, $80,000, $90,000.
Oh, yes.
This thing is just sheer fun. But, yeah, look at the back seat. And then you've got the boot, which, of course, you can go to the supermarket, you can go to Bunnings, fill it with potting mix, you can, you know, go and pick yourself up a new outdoor setting, and it fits.
That's right. And back to the rear seats again.
Yeah.
There's plenty of room back there. There's leg room.
Of course there is.
How long has that been going
on? And look at it now. So we've gone to comfort mode.
Yeah.
You heard before what an just absolute animal it
just,
is.
Just ask the back of my head.
But now, pottering around, and we're going over sort of just a fairly big thump there.
Yep. Oh, gosh, it handled that nicely. That's a bump I go over every day in my drive, and it makes one hell of a racket in my car, I can tell you that.
Well, you know, this car I just think is, it's kind of, it covers every base, ticks all the boxes, because you get the performance, you get the looks, you get the value, you get the build quality, you get the space. You get the performance. Did I mention that you get the performance?
I think
speed?
The performance has come up, yes.
And you get the all-wheel drive.
Yep.
Yep. And I think as much as, you know, the DSG gearbox from Volkswagen has had a couple of problems, but it's fixed now and it is brilliant.
Yes.
There's nothing as enjoyable as driving a fast car with a great chassis and a manual gearbox.
You've got
that level of enjoyment that you just seems to be lacking so much these days in cars.
Very much.
This car is not your vanilla, is it?
No.
This is kind of your whiz fizz sherbet bomb strawberry pop.
I don't know if the good people at Volkswagen would like that analogy, but anyway, I know where you're coming from on this one. It's beautiful. It's terrific.
The ideal family vehicle has 7 seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With 7 seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
The key to success is to properly promote your business. Altrex Auto Accessories have a simple and cost-effective way of getting your message to thousands of people every day. Promotional number plate protectors. Altrex Auto Accessories promotional number plate protectors could be screen printed with your business or dealership name, logo, phone number, whatever you require. To find out more about this affordable and effective marketing idea, visit altrex.com.au or call 02-9905-5055.
Behind the wheel.
Behind the wheel. Where motoring starts.
Yeah, we're going to be turning the start key. No, we'll be pressing the start button on the all-new Porsche Cayenne shortly, a car that got us home pretty excited about. It comes out on a new platform. It's been, of course, the pinnacle of luxury sporty SUVs since it came out.
It has, yeah.
And now, though, I think they've really upped the ante. I got a look at a pic of the interior of it. And you thought the Range Rover Velar was nice inside.
And, yes, it is very.
Why do you say the Porsche Cayenne?
Oh, better.
It's a big call, I know, but wow, can't wait. Anyway, Chris Jordan from Porsche's on shortly. Then with Simon Lai, we're going to go to the other end of the spectrum and talk Toyota Yaris.
Yeah.
Still selling well.
Yeah.
Haven't changed a lot, but still out there, plugging away.
Yeah, and that's how Toyota does stuff, I suppose. They know their product, they do it well, they know the market, they know what's wanted in They know what's wanted in each part of the market,
yep.
And the Yaris fits its niche very nicely.
Doesn't it just? Absolutely. We're also going to talk cars that were, well, a disappointment. And I think there's a couple of cars on the list that people will automatically agree with and go, yes, absolutely. But there's a couple there that I think may take you by surprise, particularly with what Simon Lai is nominating. I'm not going to go any further now because we're going to talk to a technical guru. In fact, he's a technical manager of Volvo Cars Australia, an old friend of Behind the Wheel, here to talk about a new offering from Volvo. It's a big Behind the Wheel. Welcome to David Pickett. G'day, Dave. How are you going, man?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good to talk really to you, well. David. We are keen to find out more about the XC40. Tell us the
lowdown. It's the first small SUV from Volvo ever.
Yeah, so it's the first of the compact luxury SUVs that we've done. And it's the first car off this new platform. You've heard me sort of talk about the SPA platform, which is the bigger cars.
Yeah.
So this is the compact modular architecture. So it's a whole new platform and uses chassis setup, but same sort of electrical infrastructure in regards to the dashes and the setups along that sort of way.
Right, okay. Now, this modular architecture that sits under cars, we hear it a lot from car makers these days. It kind of puts me in mind of, you know, when you're kind of hoisting up a basketball pole to kind of, you know, kind of a different level, and you kind of pull the plug out and you kind of can pull it down so it gets a bit shorter and put the, you know, the bolt back in, or you can pull the bolt out and kind of, you know, hoik it up in the air. So is that the way modular architecture works?
Pretty much. What you sort of look at is that the engine package that we've got with engine and transmission basically fits in all of the cars.
Right.
So you're not designing to have, you know, previously, you know, we'd have sort of probably 8 different engines and 6 different transmissions that went into 5 different chassis. So all of them were different and unique.
Mm.
So now you've actually got one package that is the 8-speed transmission and a 2-litre 4-cylinder engine, and that will fit in a lot of cars. So,
gotcha.
You know, from an S90 to an XC90 to XC60, the engine package and the subframe assembly is the same.
Right.
So we basically, it just reduces the number of variations you've got to cope with in manufacture.
Yeah, and essentially then increases the number of variants available to the public because you can dress it in all different styles and different shapes and different sizes.
Yeah, exactly. And it becomes in a sort of silly things as well. You know, like years ago you'd have, you know, we might have had sort of 9 or 10 different types of fuel tank. You know, now you've got a big one and a small one.
Right.
So it's all designed to fit right into the same architecture of the car right away.
Gotcha. Oh, so in theory then we should really be paying $3.60 for new cars instead of $36,000?
not really. You get a lot more now.
Yeah, true. Very true. No, being facetious. But the XC40, I've got to say, well, there's the obvious family resemblance there to that beautiful new XC60 and the stunning XC90. It's a growing market, and from what I can tell research-wise, it's probably the fastest-growing market of any in the car industry.
Yeah, it is. There's no doubt about it. It's sort of the, I suppose, you know, if you talk about the relationship with the other two cars, you know, now you've sort of gone from having, you know, what size is actually suitable as well for people, because everyone sort of wants SUVs.
Yeah.
But it's a matter of whether you want the sort of small, medium or large, I suppose, really is the question nowadays.
Yes, and I suppose everyone is looking at doing it as cheaply as possible, as economically as possible, so maybe not buying the largest one on the block is probably a good idea. And if there's one that, you know, like the XC40, that's the right size and fits your needs.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you've got people that need 7-seat cars, and there's other people that sort of look at it and go, no, it's just way too big for me. But I like exactly. That sort of type of setup of vehicle. So it's good for us now, because it now means we can sort of offer the full gambit of cars.
Yeah, indeed. And anyone that's been inside either the XC90 or the XC60 will know what a beautiful interior it is. And I know, like in my family, we would only need a small car, but still, I lust after that, you know, that sort of, you know, rectangular screen that is sort of reminiscent of a really big iPhone.
Yes.
And just, you know, the junctures between the doors and the dash and the intricate detail that's in there.
It's beautifully
done. It's something that we'll see in the XC40, yeah?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And the other thing with the XC40 is it's been really clever in regards to its packaging for, you know, practicality and use, you know, like the really big door pockets so that you can, you know, fit a load of stuff in and things like that. So, you know, little cubby holes all over the place for storage. So it's something they've really concentrated on, making it a really practical car for people.
I wish the Swedish people would teach the German people that you do need to actually carry more than a car key when you're inside a car.
No comment.
Of course, we've got some absolute weapons in the Volvo garage these days, as in the Twin 8 T8 XC90 and the plug-in hybrid turbocharged XC60, developing, I think it was, from memory, I think it's about 314 kilowatts or something, just ludicrous. Are we going to see equal craziness in the XC40 range? He says with his fingers crossed.
We will have sort of get to the point where we'll have the hybrid and things like that in the car, but we're starting on the T5 and T4 Momentum, which, you know, they get along. There's no doubt of performance in them because it's the same sort of engine we've got in the bigger cars. So, you know, the performance is good out of it. We're still getting good fuel consumption and things like that. But there's been, the main thing I think you notice when you drive the car is actually the chassis setup. It's a real, it just drives very differently, even to what we thought when we first got in the cars ourselves.
Oh,
okay. It just doesn't sort of handle like an SUV. It's more of it feels more like a station wagon sort of setup.
Oh, that sounds refreshing. Well, like you the thought of that.
When we drove the XC60, and yep. I think that was our biggest takeaway when we sort of got out, it was like, this thing actually drives brilliantly. Like, it doesn't sort of wobble all over the road like some SUVs do.
Yeah, and that's, you know, part of the change, I suppose, over the last few years. Interestingly, with this car and the S90, we started this thing with they got this new U-Boot chassis and driving simulator, which is like the biggest talk boy toy you could ever find.
Oh, awesome.
So
yeah.
It's a massive simulator. It's got sort of 9 different points of access in it. It's got seat belts, it's got cushions on the seat. Does it, as you brake, it simulates the change in load and things like this. And, you know, they can do so much work on the chassis before they actually even get the car built.
Right.
It's really sort of paying dividends now, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Mm. And, of course, Volvo have just gone from strength to strength from what was a company that was really struggling for budget when it came to R&D and things like that to suddenly this tie-up with Geely and some, well, huge pots of money to kind of do the research and development. I bet the guys over in, not Ingolstadt, what's the, come on, Pete, you know where it is.
Oh, where
Gottenberg.
Is
it? Gottenberg.
That's it, yeah. Gottenberg, yeah. I bet they're rubbing their hands together with glee going, I get to come to work tomorrow and I've got the money to design something amazing.
And I think that's come out. You know, you look in the last few years with the changes, you know, the amount of product that we've come out with, you know, everything's been replaced now. You know, we've got whole new engine setups,
yep.
Vehicle setups. Sort of it's just been a complete change over the last sort of 5-6 years, I suppose, in what the products we've had.
Yeah, indeed. Mm. And, of course, you know, if you hark back to the Dudley Moore movies of old where, you know, Boxy is good. I still love that movie. Of course, safety was always the main focus with Volvo, and that hasn't really gone away, has it?
No, it still hasn't. You know, the last car we had tested with ANCAP was the XC60, and that sort of set new records for scoring as it went through. You know, and there's so many things that we actually have in the cars that are sort of not even part of the ANCAP testing. You know, the XC40 will have a new function in it, whereas we have what they call cross-traffic alerts. So if you're trying to reverse out in between two large trucks or something like that, and in a shopping centre, you can't really see. We've got a warning that beeps on this car, and it'll actually brake if something comes along from the sides.
Cool. So that's great, isn't it?
Braking systems and things like that.
Yeah. And that's from memory. That's like a radar system that kind of operates. It kind of goes underneath the car beside you to kind of see what's beside that.
Yeah, it's like using the parking sensors you've got on the back of the car, but it's sort of more high tech, and they're on the side. So as you reverse out, there's radar looking down the side from the rear quarter, looking down the roads on either side of you and seeing what's coming.
Yeah, see, that's just genius stuff. It really is. Of course, automation, I'm sure, is high on the agenda for Volvo. I know you guys have been doing testing with all sorts of ride-sharing companies and things like that. It's something that's going to feature strongly in Volvo's future.
Yeah, it's... We've got a few sort of tie-ups. We've got our own Drive Me project, which is the autonomous cars coming up. But the other thing I'm starting to look at now is also car sharing as well from Volvo's point of view. So, you know, in the future, you'll be able to actually, you know, if I need to lend you my car, I can actually, using the phone app, I can actually allow you access for the car for a few hours, and I hope you put it back so that I know where it is. And, you know, so that's the sort of thing as well. So you have that as a family sharing, and then obviously possibility from that is then go to commercial sharing as well.
Yeah, right.
That's terrific.
Yeah,
that's
great future ahead, and good to see Volvo kicking goals. We could talk all day, but Dave, we're out of time again. David Pickett, Technical Manager of Volvo Cars Australia. We'll chat to you again probably next week with another new model, I'm sure.
Okay. Thanks, guys. Bye.
motorists are taking more notice than ever about how their car ownership affects the environment. But did you know that simply keeping your car clean can also be environmentally damaging? If you want to do the right thing and keep potentially harmful chemicals out of the drains, then invest in the EcoCar car cleaning range from Altrex Auto Accessories. EcoCar are a range of effective and environmentally safe products that every Australian garage should have. And they contain environmentally friendly ingredients including natural coconut and aloe vera. You can purchase the EcoCar car cleaning range from the Altrex Auto Accessories online store at altrex.com.au.
Australian families looking for the ideal vehicle for their needs are often left frustrated. Some vehicles seem to tick all the boxes but then cost the earth. Others are well priced but don't have the space or features that families need. Stop compromising, as there is an option that won't leave you wanting more. The new Havel H9. Boasting a 180 kilowatt turbo engine, 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability and 7-seat capacity, the Havel H9 just can't be beaten. Visit your local Havel dealership today or havel.com.au.
Behind the wheel.
On the road. Accelerated by behindthewheel.com.au.
Yeah, well, 500 episodes of Behind the Wheel on air every week since July 2007. And for those who've been listening since then, congratulations, the check is in the mail.
And would you use that check, do you think, to go and maybe put a bit of a deposit on a new Porsche Cayenne, do you reckon?
No, because the check's only 43 cents worth.
Oh.
Don't think it's going to quite cut it for the new Porsche Cayenne.
No, maybe not.
No.
Look, well, that'd be nice.
You never know. Let's ask the man who knows. Old friend of Behind the Wheel, it's great to have him. The wonderful Chris Jordan. He's Head of Communications for Porsche Cars Australia. G'day, Chris. How are you going, mate?
Good, guys. Happy 500.
Thank you, mate.
Thank you so much. And
43 cents won't cut it, will it?
No, probably not.
Now, the new Porsche Cayenne, this is generation number 3 of what I've got to say is still, I'm assuming it is still the absolute benchmark when it comes to sports utility vehicles.
For sure, yeah. You're right, the third generation of the Cayenne, and I like to refer to it as the sports car of its segment. So it's a large SUV, but certainly the traits of a Porsche are still there for everyone, not only the premium and luxury side of things, but also the performance and the handling of the car for a car of its size are exceptional.
Now, the Cayenne, of course, transformed the company, didn't it?
Oh, for sure. It's funny that actually Ferdinand Porsche mentioned in 1989, actually, that if Porsche was ever to build an SUV, it would still have all the DNA of a Porsche. It's certainly grown the business in terms of the volume, in terms of the amount of customers we deal with. But it's great that although Porsche has expanded into Cayenne and then following that Macan and also Panamera, the company still does things like build 911 GT3s, GT2 RSs, et cetera, and of course, obviously, 718 Cayman and Boxster.
And I suppose it was the SUVs and the huge roaring success of the Cayenne that kind of made sure that those legacies were always intact and would continue on.
For sure, it's expanded the size of Porsche and gives a scale. Was obviously part of the Volkswagen group in the last couple of decades as well, which also helps with that. But it's certainly Porsche for a long time was builder of fantastic, exciting sports cars.
Indeed.
But clearly that comes at a smaller size. The cars are sort of exclusive in a way. So
yep.
Difficult to achieve scale when you're just producing exclusive sports cars. The SUVs has expanded our business, it's expanded the dealers that we deal with as well, and it's expanded the customers that we deal with as well.
And those customers, I suppose every year that JD Power survey comes out of the States and it's always headed by Porsche for customer satisfaction and build quality and all those things.
The cars are all built to an exceptionally high standard, which helps along the way. The problems are few and far between, which is fantastic. But also, our dealers do a fantastic job in terms of looking after the customers and knowing them very, very well. And in turn, they have a lot of repeat business from those customers and end up having long, meaningful relationships in terms of repeat business and multiple ownership as well.
Now, of course, the new Cayenne, that's sort of the topic of the day. How is it different to the old one?
There's been lots of improvements across the board, but like most Porsche models, you can see the design evolve from model to model, but the styling is reasonably consistent. We had already unveiled and announced the pricing for the base, the S, and the Turbo.
Yeah.
And then just last week, we've unveiled the Cayenne e-hybrid, which was the global unveil and confirmed that it'll come to Australia in the third quarter of this year. And I think this is going to be the generation of Cayenne where hybrid is going to play a bigger part. We all know globally what's happening with diesel.
Yep.
Diesel is, there's still huge demand for diesel globally, but it is tapering. And exactly the same time while that's happening, people are moving towards hybrids. The product available in a hybrid is drastically improving, and that's seeing demand rise. In Europe, in Panamera, for example, we have 60% of the sales are hybrids. In Australia, it's 60%? About 25%.
Wow.
Yeah, even the number in Australia, 25% of Panamera sales being hybrid is...
And that's huge. Absolutely. Considering how many people are still into brown coal in Australia, that is really impressive.
Well, and that's why I flagged that with Cayenne, early days...
Yeah.
I think this is going to be, it's a significant car for us because Porsche's pushing e-performance. Clearly, we've got things like Mission E,
yeah.
Pure Electric on the horizon. But even before we get to that, we've got things like the new Cayenne in e-hybrid, which is going to be significant because some of the things that maybe pulled people away from hybrid in the past are now going away. This car offers a competitive price, fantastic towing ability, fantastic acceleration as well as efficiency of a hybrid, and there's not any sacrifice in terms of storage. The weight of the car is comparable to other models, so a lot of things that might have held people back from hybrids previously are not a factor in this model.
What about range, which is the thing that I can still never get my head around it. You're out and about and you think, look, I'll just put the foot down, this performance is exhilarating, and you think, oh, wait a minute, I don't know if I can get home.
That's the beauty of a hybrid, Peter. The car can drive on all electric for between 42 and 44 kilometres.
Mm-hmm.
So what you'll find is the car in a lot of the traffic jam city crawling can just go in
just
all electric and give you fantastic fuel economy because it's not using much fuel at all. But then when you get on the open road, the performance of the internal combustion engine kicks in.
So the base model petrol, for example, how much cheaper would that be than the hybrid?
I think it's about 15,000.
Okay.
15,000.
That's very good, actually.
So, yeah, the grade walk goes base, e-hybrid, S, turbo. You could say that the e-hybrid is being positioned there on a price premium very similar to what a diesel usually would be over a petrol.
Now, the first of them are landing in the country now, aren't they? Not the e-hybrid, but the
soon.
Other...
very soon. So, starter sales will be in June next month.
Now, I know we're all under time pressure. We're running out of time. Very quickly, you did mention Mission E before. It is possibly the most stunning-looking car ever designed, and if you've not seen it, go to our website, behindthewheel.com.au. But this really is the all-electric supercar from Porsche, yeah?
Yeah, that's a very exciting project. It's been unveiled for a while now, and the next variant of it, which is the Mission E Cross Turismo, was unveiled at Geneva this year as well.
That's right, which is sort of code for station wagon, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. A bit of a crossover wagon, high-riding crossover SUV sort of thing. So.
Sure.
Yeah, look, 2020 is probably when that's coming to Australia, but it's still in concept form, so still a while off. There'll be a few milestones to come before it arrives on sale in Australia, but certainly super exciting that moving forward for Porsche, we've really got three pillars of our product strategy. Battery electric vehicles like Mission E,
yep.
E-performance hybrids like Cayenne hybrid we've been talking about,
yep.
And Panamera hybrid, etc., and then also improving the efficiency of internal combustion engines as well. So we've got it all covered.
Excellent. Exciting times ahead. Always great to talk to you. Bring great news. Chris Jordan from Porsche Cars Australia. Mate, thanks heaps.
Thanks, guys. Good luck blowing 500 candles out on the birthday cake.
We started last week.
Oh, very good.
Yep. All right, well, it's about that time for our 500th product review for our good mates at Alltrex Auto Accessories. And, of course, the best ideas are often the simplest, and that's certainly the case with our product of the week. It's CarSmart's blade dryer. Now, for years, you've probably been missing a very important step in the car wash process because, yeah, you wash the car, but you've got to rinse it off straight afterwards, and not just with a bit of water. You've got to get the chamois out. instead of those chamois that tend to last about one car wash, yeah?
That's right, and then they start shredding, and then they start just start leaving
little
bits
of stuff.
Or you might
kind of wipe kind of a little bit too low, and it'll get a bit of dirt on it, and then it'll start.
Oh, look out.
And if you don't put the lid on properly, they go black and mouldy.
That's exactly right.
Anyway, so that's why you should go and buy yourself a CarSmart blade dryer.
Hmm.
It easily gets rid of all that extra water. You basically just have to go, it's like a squeegee for your window, but it's soft enough and gentle enough to be able to use on kind of the most expensive car Ducos, and it gets into all the little nooks and crannies, and anything that can get into a nook or a cranny, we're big fans of here at Behind the Wheel.
Absolutely.
To order your CarSmart blade dryer now, head to Alltrex Auto Accessories. They've got an excellent online store, so easy to navigate, and it's cheap too. It's like $10, less than $10 for this. Check it out, alltrex.com.au.
Havel's just released a new family seven-seater SUV, the Havel H9. A finalist in the 2017 4x4 Australia Awards, the Havel H9 is an impressive SUV, boasting a 180-kilowatt turbo engine, smooth 8-speed auto, 5-year warranty, real off-road ability, and 7-seat capacity. The luxurious Havel H9 will take you to the outback and back in complete comfort. It's the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.
You've heard us on the radio. Now check out the Behind the Wheel website. At behindthewheel.com.au, you can browse all our latest car reviews and car product reviews too. You can also watch our video car reviews and check out all the latest auto news. And make sure you leave your comments. Give us feedback, ask for advice, or just let us know all about your car. Behindthewheel.com.au, where motoring starts.
Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel. Where motoring starts.
Oh, who'd have thunk we'd made it through not only this show, but 500 of them?
It's absolutely remarkable.
Yep. And you really know what? Is. We really couldn't have done it without those long-suffering listeners out there going, oh, they're talking about that again.
they're not going to say
Kia Stinger one more time,
are they?
Oh,
they're going on about that again.
Do they love every car they drive?
Yeah, all that
stuff. You know what we do? That's the problem. We sit down in our kind of planning meetings early in the week and we go, what are we going to talk about? Can we come up with a car that we don't like? And that
I haven't actually come across one.
There's been a couple I've been kind of a bit nonplussed with, but not that I actively dislike.
No.
Not the way I used to actively dislike Mazda Capellas when I was a 9-year-old.
That's right.
I took an umbrage against them. I don't know why, but I just didn't like them.
Mazdas.
No. I didn't.
I seem to remember, and I had one at one stage. You said, "You what? What are you thinking?" And it actually was a terrific car.
It was, and it was my hatred for them was based on absolutely nothing.
I don't know.
It just popped into my head one day that you got to hate Mazdas. I don't know.
But anyway, you've
maybe
come a long way
since. Maybe it had something to do with the
that.
Old days of Bathurst when George Fury drove the Datsun Bluebird and what's-his-name was in the RX-7. Maybe that's where the... Maybe it was that rivalry was. That kind of pointed me...
Yes. Well, I think you and a Datsun Bluebird would just be perfect. And no wonder you chose that instead of the Mazda.
I had the Triple S.
Oh, yes. Which actually was lovely because... somehow or other, the decals made it go faster. And
they did.
I just don't get how that worked. It's miraculous.
I know. It's a bit like what happened to the Barina when they put the Sports Girl decals on them.
Exactly. I think you had one of those too.
No, in fact, I've got a guy on the line who used to have one. In fact, I think it's still in the driveway. Simon Lye.
Jeez, that's not fair. Hi, Chris and Pete.
Hello, congratulations, Simon. By the way. Happy 500, Simon. Great to talk to you. Tell us about your experience this week, because you've gone from huge and imposing the kind of vehicle that goes wherever it feels like to something a little more diminutive.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the nature of our job, isn't it? We get to drive all sorts. And this week I'm in a Toyota Yaris. And it was a fun little thing, I must say.
Oh, is it the Sports Girl edition?
Hey.
Yes, Chris.
Now that actually touches a nerve here, because I have been a Yaris owner in my life. I bought it as a second car, just to just to be there when your main car was sort of in the garage, and you thought, I'll just run up to the shops in this thing. I ended up using it more often than I was using my Audi A8 at the time.
Yeah, that's
so
the
go
car.
Figure.
It's like your clothes, you always use the cheap ones more often than you do the expensive ones.
Indeed. Because it started life when the one you had, I think, was called a Toyota Echo.
And it wasn't Echo, yes.
And it had the dashboard and the speedo in the centre of the dash. Yes, exactly right. Yeah, so just to make it cheaper for Toyota to ship it around the world.
Exactly.
But it was all a bit odd. Do they still have the speedo in the centre of the dash line?
Well, not exactly, but they've improved a few little things since the Echo. That wasn't the most attractive thing. No, found that flat back was a bit weird.
It was a dumpy-looking old thing. I always thought it was slightly...
We're still talking about the car, right?
Thank you. I always liked it, the two-door better than the... There was a kind of a four-door sedan version.
Oh, the sedan version was hideous,
The glummest look on its face. It looked like the front grill had been put in upside down.
It looked
like it was sooking down the road.
And it kind of had a bum on it that kind of looked like it hadn't tucked its shirt in properly.
Exactly.
You know, so there was this bit sort of sticking up at the back. And
it looked brave, but failing, I thought.
So the 2018 Toyota Yaris, tell us about that, please.
Yeah, they've improved on that quite a bit. They did an external styling refresh, and I'd say it's a bit up there with like a Mazda 2. It doesn't seem so boring as Toyota it used to, and you know, a little bit more vibrant, I'd say.
Okay.
Well, I must say, I've changed my view a little bit about Toyotas anyway, driving the CHR. I love that. I just love funky. The look of it. It's funky and it's great fun and it goes well. And
they've lifted their game.
I agree. I mean, look, they've always been fabulous anyway, but you know, a little bit, just make it a bit more funky. I think we'd all like that.
Yeah, exactly. That's true.
Except especially a groover interior, like you.
Oh, well, thanks. But the insides are a bit plain and boring. You know, it's a lot of black plastic and nothing too inspiring there. But, you know, it's practical. They've got nice, large, big buttons. It's just a simple, easy car to drive, you know, uncomplicated, no frills.
How much?
You're looking at just under 20 grand for the SX, which is the mid-spec that I drove.
Okay. And is that auto or manual?
The auto.
Okay.
The other one that I had, I think it came with a Safety Sense package, so it does have lane departure and AEB.
But you've got to pay extra for that,
About 650, which is normally in the top of the range model.
That's pretty good.
Still not really good enough. It should be across the range.
At least it's available, though,
further
down the food chain.
That's a good point.
And now, Simon, the engine, the size motor?
Oh, well, it's small. As you can imagine, it's 1.5 litres and four-speed automatic. So, you know,
four-speed automatic?
Only four. So,
are you sure this is a 2018 model you've got?
I think so. Why?
Four-speed automatic. Chris, that went out in 1986.
Chris rather likes the likes the eight-speed automatics.
Come on.
So they're always hunting for the right gear to be in. Oh, and then wait a minute, we've got to go down one or up one. I don't know. With the four-speed, you never have to think about it.
Even so, it was quite nice to drive. I found it was quite zippy. I mean, it'll over rev a bit if you really push it. But for a car that size, just to get around town, it's fine.
Okay. Good well, I think if anyone is out there, go look and looking for a small city car, I suppose you could call them. It's kind of the Toyota Yaris is probably the most popular, closely followed by the Mazda 2, which
Mazda
has done
2
very
is a great
well.
Car. Great
around
car.
About the same price.
Yep.
But you know, the car that was always very good and now is. Like head and shoulders above the rest is the Volkswagen Polo.
Polo, here we go. And you're quite right.
And that's 17,990.
And it's a stunning car. And I remember driving one years ago and I thought, gee, this is a great
car. Well, this new incarnation is just a complete step up.
Yep,
so
I agree.
We're pleased you drove the Toyota Yaris, but you should have been driving the Volkswagen Polo, Simon.
Yeah, next time, guys.
Rach, you always you're one for a great topic. So when we have our planning meetings, you've always come up with something creative and interesting and something that makes us laugh. And I think this week's is probably one of your very best. So come on,
thanks.
Give us your crowning achievement. What is it?
We're going to talk about cars that we thought were awesome, and then when we finally got to drive it, realised what a turd.
Right. Oh. Not to mince words.
That's exactly
it. I'm sure we've all been there.
We do. And I think the man that needs to take the lead on this topic is the one and only Simon Lai.
Simon Lai.
I had a poster of the Lamborghini Countach on my wall when I was a kid.
Didn't everybody?
And, you know, it defines the 80s and, you know, it just looks fantastic. It's like so futuristic and, you know, it's something that just looks fast and you want to drive. And this video, it was a review, of course, of what the car actually is like because not many people can get near one.
Yeah.
And after I watched it and they showed the features and how they laid out everything in the car, it's possibly the worst car I've ever heard of. I was even laughing watching the video. I mean, for example, there's one windscreen wiper at the front, but yeah. they mounted the pivot point right in front of the driver. So it only goes vertical and it cleans half the window in front of you, so you can't actually see anything. Then beyond that, there's the latch for the door. So it's kind of like a button underneath the handle of the door. That's fine. But they decided to put the key there as well. So you have to try and find the keyhole vertically.
Vertically under the door handle? Open.
Yeah.
It's so complicated.
And at the back, there is the engine, of course, you know, being a V12.
Yep.
But behind that is also the boot. It's not at the front. So you got one door for the engine and one door for the boot. And when you open one, you can't close the other one. And that's not all. On top of that, there's a big spoiler. So with all that in the way, the rear window is just one tiny slit. They can't see anything whatsoever. So how do you reverse it? You've got to lift the door up. Remember, it's got those
scissor doors, hasn't it? Yeah.
You've got to kind of hang out the car. And then look and hope for the best. And then try and back it out.
The Countach, yeah. good for a bedroom poster, not good in your garage.
Exactly.
Have you got a nomination, Rach?
I do. Back in the 80s, it was about the mid-80s, a friend of my dad's had an Alfa Romeo GTV.
Ah, right.
And we all thought... He went away for about 2 months and gave it to Dad to look after at the house because he wanted someone to turn it over occasionally. And we were all super excited because it was this Italian, beautiful car. And my dad's Italian, so he was really stoked. And to be honest, his friend would have been better just to leave it at his house because it literally did not run the whole 2 months that we had it. Every time my dad would try to start it up to take it out, he'd get it started, he'd try to drive it, it'd conk out, and this thing was an absolute turd of a car. It looked beautiful, couldn't get it on the road. It never ran. So disappointing.
Well, look, I mean, really, you're not a motoring enthusiast, I've heard said, if you haven't owned and pushed an Alfa.
Yes. More emphasis on the pushing.
Yes. Yes,
absolutely. Because I don't know anyone that's had an Alfa that's like those older models, late 70s, early 80s Alfas that didn't at some point have to push it along some road somewhere.
Even some of the newer ones, that 147, remember the little 147 hatch probably 10 or 15 years ago? Nice to look at, but wow.
Look out.
Transmission lasted about 17 kilometres.
Rachel.
It's like a lot of us Italians, nice to look at, but
when you delve
not
deeper.
Much beyond that.
500 shows in for Behind the Wheel. Couldn't have done it without the one and only Simon Lai.
No worries.
Or Rachel Franco.
Lovely, thank you.
And the fabulous Peter Hitchin. Thanks very much.
No worries.
See you all next week. Bye.
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 See
you. Bye. Bye.
One of the smartest and most versatile products in the Altrex Auto Accessories range is Skin's Invisible Protection Film. Apply to your car's headlights or paintwork to protect from stone chips and road debris damage without affecting aerodynamic efficiency or the look of your car. You can use the ultra-thin and strong film on items around your house, such as windows, furniture and white goods. Order a roll now at altrex.com.au or pick some up at your local auto accessory retailer. Skin's Invisible Protection Film. The clear choice in paintwork and headlight protection, and a whole lot more.
The ideal family vehicle has 7 seats, is spacious, practical, luxurious, and realistically priced. The new Havel H9 ticks all those boxes. The 2018 Havel H9 has just landed in Australian dealerships and boasts a turbocharged 180-kilowatt engine, 8-speed auto transmission, and more of the luxuries car buyers have come to expect from Havel. With 7 seats, great off-road ability, and a 5-year warranty, this is the ultimate family adventure SUV. Visit your Havel dealer to see what everyone is raving about, or havel.com.au.